My goodness, man, we've had a heat wave in the studio. We started off here at 66 degrees. Maybe it was the warmth of our friend Alex Rich. We're up to 68. That's the first time I've seen it hit 68, Sue.
Wow.
This week.
I don't feel the difference.
No, I don't either. We still have our blankets on, yep. So we appreciate. We identified the listener.
Timothy
Scott was the person who sent us all blankets here in the studio. We appreciate his generosity. We're going to have a lot of fun tomorrow afternoon. Not that we don't always have fun, but George Gray will be here from The Price is Right. He'll play a little game we like to call The Price is Wrong. George is awesome. The last time he was in here, and I think it was because he knew he had some friends that were listening on the stream across the country, it was a Hall of Fame level Price is Wrong. So we'll see if he can beat that or match that. Our former producer, we call him Producer Emeritus David Klein, helps come up with the items and has done a really good job. You have to have good items, and they have to be kind of funny. And when George can work around some fun items, we essentially play a game that's like The Price is Right, you see, but we call it The Price is Wrong. It's very complicated, and it's heavy competition, right?
Yes.
So that's tomorrow in the 4 o'clock hour. Senator Eric Schmidt is back with us tonight. He's got a new book out. It's called The Last Line of Defense, How to Beat the Left in Court. We have some other things to discuss with him as well. Senator, welcome back. It's been a little while. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Mark. It's great to be with you.
How about this path that former Missouri attorneys general have to get to D.C.? Josh Hawley seemingly done pretty well. You've done pretty well. Now Andrew Bailey heads over to help with the FBI. It's kind of an amazing track, that position, isn't it?
It really is. Ironically, you know, the only other two AGs that went directly to the Senate were, I guess Danforth had done it, and then Eagleton, but I think he actually was in the lieutenant governor spot. So yeah, it's a relatively recent kind of turn of events, but I'm happy for Andrew. He's done a great job, and I think he more hands on deck in the FBI, the better, I suppose, right?
Happy for him, too, but I love the job. Look, you know how much I was a fan of the work that you were doing. I think he has done an exceptional job in the Missouri AG's office. Look, nothing against Catherine. I think she's experienced, and she's certainly qualified to do the job. She's going to be with me in the studio tomorrow, by the way, but I hate to lose Andrew to Washington. That does not, of course, you know, completely discount his return to Missouri politics at some point.
Yeah, no, I think he you know, was called to serve, right? And he's doing it in a different capacity. And actually just had an announcement today with Kash Patel. We've been working on this since day one with the FBI to have a larger permanent presence in St. Louis. We made that announcement today. It's the per capita, the biggest investment the FBI's made in any place in the country, and worked very closely with Kash Patel on that. We were able to announce that today. And so, we want to make sure we're doing everything we can for violent crime in St. Louis.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
I saw that, and you kind of beat me to the punch on the question. So what is that all about? Is that something that you've been working on for a while? Is it something that they will focus on in particular with, you know, in coordination with local authorities? Is there something different about it, or just trying to man up here and make sure that we have enough of an FBI presence?
Well, it's interesting. So, you know, during the confirmation process, there are a few things I wanted to work on specifically for Missouri, and as it turns out, for St. Louis. With on the defense side, I talked to Pete Hegseth and of course had dinner with President Trump specifically about the F-47. We're able to deliver that. So the thousands of jobs and hundreds of millions of dollars worth of investments going to happen, hundreds of billions of dollars worth of investments going to happen in St. Louis. That was a big deliverable. And then this is something I talked to Kash Patel about during his confirmation. He had an interesting conversation about his vision, and he wanted to get FBI agents out of Washington and into the field across the country. I said, well, I've got the perfect spot for you in my hometown of St. Louis, where, you know, it's just been riddled with violent crime. And we don't want to do this in a way that it's just, you know, sort of people in an office, but actually people who are going to take on violent crime, help make those arrests, work with the locals, and lead the prosecutions. And so today we were able to finally announce that. There's a lot of logistics that go into that. But it's the biggest investment the FBI's had in the country in a particular place. And so that's going to be in St. Louis. And you know, when I was AG, we launched the Safer Streets Initiative, where we partnered with, you know, the feds on criminal prosecutions. When Biden came in, sadly, that thing went away. They canceled the program. And so I want to do everything I can now in this capacity to help clean up the streets of St. Louis.
Sue, it's been confusing to me because, Eric, we had a great relationship with a couple of the different FBI directors here
yes.
in St. Louis, or what they, you know, the assistant special agents in charge or whatever. The Rebecca Wu, who I think is now Rebecca Neighbor, she used to be a reporter, and she would be great at introducing us to the new
yes.
special agent in charge. And there were at least three that I, you know, got to know pretty well. And then when I forget the last guy's name, he ended up going
remember.
Back to Washington. And I don't know if it's because they don't have someone in that permanent position, but we've kind of lost touch with them, which is unfortunate because they've done such a great job at, you know, communicating with
yes.
us some of the successes that they've had. And I was able to, Eric, I don't know if you ever did this, but they did this, what'd they call it? Damn it, Sue. The Citizens Academy.
Yes. And it was fantastic and eye opening.
Yeah. So you know, I was able to sit in a class. I don't even know why I was invited. There were a bunch of important people there, like business leaders, Mark Carter from the St. Louis County Council. But they took us through essentially some of the cases that, you know, that they would investigate. And it was almost like a classroom setting. But then we got to go to the range. I got to shoot a machine gun, which was pretty fun. But
nice. The
thing that we always point to, and Sue's done this as well, is we all had a simulation for like a mass shooting or something like that. And you'd be in front of this big screen. You know, it was all computer oriented. And you'd have to decide. Like, I was running back cover for a mass shooting at a warehouse, and I had to make sure that the people that were rushing out to safety didn't have one of the bad guys with them, because, you know, sometimes they hide with the people that are running out of the building. But the point of all this is that you are put in, I wish everyone in the
yes.
country could have this opportunity, because you're put in a situation where you have to make a snap decision, and you would have much greater appreciation for what the cops have to do on a regular basis.
Well, and one last point on this too is, my former chief deputy, Tom Albus, is the new U.S. attorney. He's the acting U.S. attorney. We look forward to his confirmation. And then one of my other, the Missouri is getting St. Louis, in particular the Eastern District. The first four district court judges out of the gate are from President Trump, are in the East, in the country, are here coming to Missouri in the Eastern District. So what does that mean? We're going to have four new judges. We're going to have a new U.S. attorney. We got all these FBI agents that are coming now. I mean, this has been something that I've been working on for the first 7 months of the administration. It's kind of it's important to see to fruition to take on the violent crime problem we have in St. Louis. So the things are at least situated here for hopefully some good results.
Yeah, that's great. Now let me segue into D.C. and what's happening there. There were some protests. We had a great event. I have some audio that I'm going to share a little bit later from J.D. Vance, the vice president. We also had Stephen Smith there today. And Stephen Miller was there today. And others, you know, kind of focusing on that with all these protesters outside of Union Station. But, you know, I think it's going to be difficult for a lot of people on the left to criticize this when it actually works and reduces crime.
Yeah, I mean, it turns out when you have a bigger police presence and you prosecute violent crime, it is a deterrent, and you take the violent people off the streets. The truth of the matter is, it's a very small segment, even of criminals that are actually engaging in the violent crime. And you just have to have the political will, honestly, to go do that and give law enforcement the room to operate. And that's what's happening in Washington, D.C. And that's what gives me hope in St. Louis, is that what we've been talking about here is what I don't want. And I've seen enough of this as my previous role. We don't need people who are doing, I mean, white collar crime is important to go after. I'm talking about violent crime,
yes, yes,
in particular neighborhoods in St. Louis that we need to clean up. You know, and everybody deserves to feel safe, especially the people in the neighborhoods that have been terrorized by violent crime. So, yes, this is happening in Washington, D.C. It's a great test case. I think violent crime is already way down just in like a week and a half. So they're taking the bad guys off the streets, and that should be something. I don't think that should be partisan, but sadly in this day and age, it probably is.
Well, and Stephen Miller made a brilliant point about this. Look, the white hippies that are out there and they're yelling and shouting about this, you know, that's the 1%, the 99% of people who live, and the same thing for St. Louis with the black residents and in neighborhoods, they want the police to protect them and their kids and their grandkids. But you get the opposite feeling based on the BLM folks and the narrative from Megan Green and all the nutcases here and also in Washington. It's the opposite of reality.
I think people are tired of all the virtue signaling, honestly, from a lot of the folks on the left here, when real people have been affected. You know, like, it isn't 2020 anymore. Like, we're over it. We're tired of the BS, and we're going to clean up the streets. And you kind of just need people who are going to bulldoze their way in to go do it. And I think that's what we're seeing right now.
Let me get your thoughts on some foreign policy stuff, because obviously, you know, Trump likes to get things done. He's getting things done day after day after day. I think it's remarkable, and you won't hear this from the legacy media. Now, we don't know how this is going to end. It's remarkable that he got Vladimir Putin to a meeting in Anchorage last week with a little show of force behind him, by the way. I love that with the B2. And all these European leaders to Washington on Monday. I heard he was on the phone until the early morning hours of yesterday, still trying to talk about some of this. Now, what happens next with Zelensky and Putin and a meeting along those lines? That might be a little difficult to, you know, execute. Obviously, the president thought this one might be a little easier to solve. But what are your thoughts on the progress there?
It's just pretty incredible. And, you know, I include myself. I think it's the emerging, the ascendant foreign policy view in Washington, but it's still in permanent Washington, this whole America first, American realism foreign policy that I subscribe to, that President Trump, J.D. Vance subscribe to. It's very different than sort of the neoconservative or neoliberal view that's dominated Washington for such a long time. And this is the result of actually having an American president who has the confidence and the strength to, you know, like with Putin coming in, like the left was just losing their minds that he would be meeting with this guy. If you're actually engaged in real world diplomacy, not just white papers at Harvard, like you meet with people that you wouldn't necessarily want to marry your daughter, but they're like leaders of a country. They're at war and you're trying to broker a peace where a million people plus have died. Thousands more die every week. It is a meat grinder. President Trump is trying to, it's not our war. Like, this is their war, but he's trying to bring this to a resolution. That's what leadership looks like. And I think that's the kind of stuff that can unite the country. He's done it. I mean, Azerbaijan and Armenia and Pakistan and India. I mean, all the stuff that he's bringing these world leaders together, because he's using the levers that we have as the United States, whether it's trade or all the other things, to bring people to the table and stop the killing. Like, that's something I think we should celebrate. So who knows where this goes? The next step is this bilateral meeting between Russia and Ukraine, and there's still a lot of thorny issues to work out. But at least he's given it a try, which is much better than we saw last 4 years, where it was just a blank check for an endless war.
Senator Eric Schmidt is here. What is next legislatively coming off? You guys, you know, Congress is on a little bit of a break. It was in the aftermath of the Big Beautiful Bill. There's still some, you know, I forget what the process is called now that we enter into, where you're looking at some of the budgetary items and trying to, you know, cut more money back. But what does the fall look like legislatively for Congress?
Well, before we left, I had the honor and was trusted by the White House and my Senate colleagues to handle the rescissions package. So it's the first time we've done that in 30 years and managed the floor for 17 hours to get that done. And that defunded NPR, it defunded PBS, it got rid of this ridiculous spending at USAID for Guatemalan sex changes and DEI in Burma. All this nonsense. So that was a big win, that we showed the political will we could go do that. So when we come back, we're really kind of in two phases, the appropriations process. The Senate's committed to, you know, moving forward with appropriations. That's got to be done by September 30th. We'll see if the Democrats continue their obstruction on that or not. And then also the National Defense Authorization bill we do every year. I'm on the Armed Services Committee. We'll likely move that. That's got a lot of key investments, including for the F-47 in St. Louis, the B-21, which is the replacement for the B-2, Fort Leonard Wood, all the contractors that help, you know, we're trying to expand our industrial base. St. Louis, this is my vision, and one of the things I'm working on is make St. Louis the defense tech capital of the United States. That's our rightful place, and we're working on with a bunch of different companies. Scale AI just announced that they're moving into the one of the buildings downtown. This is what my, when I meet with these people who come in and they want to talk about the Armed Services Committee and what we do, I ask them what their presence is in Missouri. And I just think it's a great spot for us to be in. The F-47 is going to mean a lot, and all the kind of contractors that work on that. So those are the two things I would say: appropriations, and then the NDAA. Those are the big ticket items coming up probably in September.
Well, tell me, I this kind of caught me off guard, and I don't know if you know this, but I had a little bit of a leave of absence here recently, and I didn't know that you had a book. So the book is called The Last Line of Defense, How to Beat the Left in Court. I'm just curious because I don't have a copy of it. Am I mentioned in the foreword, the acknowledgments, the epilogue, or is there an entire chapter? It has to be one of those, right?
Well, they put Senator Eric Schmidt, I tried to get them to change it to the official U.S. Senator of the Mark Reardon Show, but there wasn't enough space, I guess. But
darn it.
This is exciting. Like, and what your listeners are going to love, Mark, I've been coming on your show more than any outlet, you know, since I was a state senator.
Yeah.
And this is the story of what it's like to stand in the gap when the left was coming for all of our freedoms, when President Trump was out of power, whether it was the vaccine mandates, we took that to the Supreme Court, we won. Whether it was the student loan debt forgiveness case, when I was AG, we took that to the Supreme Court and we won. We filed the Missouri versus Biden case and exposed the vast censorship enterprise. we really stood in the gap, not just at the federal level, but the local level. When you have these insane masking policies for kids, we fought back and we won. And it's really a playbook of how conservatives can fight in the courts and win. And we held the line until the cavalry arrived, and that was President Trump in November of 2024 when the fever broke. So your audience is going to love it. They can go on Amazon right now. I know people are driving. Some people are driving. Do not drive off the road. Pull over.
Don't.
You can order it on your Amazon app. I just think I've been doing a lot of national shows about it. But for your audience in particular, this is a Missouri-centered book about how we led the charge, really, to hold the line, like I said, until common sense could return.
I love it. I was bragging on you with Sean Spicer yesterday. He said that he had you on about the book. And one of the things I always tell people, and you know this because I think you've heard me say it on the air, is I was always amazed, and I've known a lot of politicians over the course of my four decades plus covering politics, but there are people who change in politics, and there are people who are kind of, you know, you're normal. You're like a normal person who follows baseball and has passions for things, and you play golf and you can relate to people. And I say this with all sincerity because I've seen you operate this way. And I'm always worried when someone comes from, you know, their humble beginnings, as you said, as a state senator, you get all the way and very quickly, I would say, to Washington, not only as a member of the United States Senate, but as a important member of the United States Senate. And I was bragging on you because of that, because I always felt like back when I was a young conservative, and I never was ashamed of that, but I always thought, why are Republicans always dorky pencil neck geeks? We're the cool Republicans. And you know, I said this to Sean, you become very close with J.D. Vance. And I think one of the realities of that is you're both like real people.
Right. No, that's how we bonded. Honestly, we came into the Senate together. He's like a normal dude.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll watch football and have some beers, and just like a regular guy. And so, you know, we bonded. And as my campaign slogan in 2022 was, Mark, you remember, I don't come from billions, I come from Bridgeton.
Right,
so
that's right.
I just try to be myself. I don't know any other way to do this. And I try to have some fun with it. But that's a huge compliment to me. In fact, it happens in DC. My staff will tell me, they're like, they walked away and they said, he just seems so normal, which, by the way, is the biggest compliment I think you could give me.
But good for you. It's real. You know, because I'm not going to lie. I told people when you get to the Senate, I'm like, man, I hope Schmidt doesn't change, because, you know, I've seen people change, maybe even the other member of our United States Senate. But I, you know, I love the way you're doing things and having fun with it. I mean, I'm shocked that you can come on this show, because you're on Laura Ingraham's show like 4 days a week, too. So I appreciate you squeezing me in.
Well, you know, I love you, Mark. I love you. We've known each other a long time. It's been too long since we got to a ball game together. But between now and then, I will make sure I get you a copy, a signed copy of noting my affection for you. And I do want to make sure that the audience does check this book out. I mean it sincerely. I think they're going to love it, because I was coming on your show talking about these mask lawsuits, talk about the censorship, all that stuff. So your audience was kind of living in real time. It's out for the broader audience, but they can check it out. Last Line of Defense. Anywhere books are sold. It was really fun to write it, and a lot of reflection. I've never written a book before, and you kind of look back on a crazy, wild time that was defined by like COVID tyranny and social unrest and Kim Gardner and all this crazy stuff that was going on at the same time. But I think the lesson was, if you got guts, if you got courage, if you're not worried about what people are going to say, you can do a lot of really good and important things for the people you represent, and that's the story.
I love it. Congratulations on the book. Good to talk with you, and I hope to see you soon. Thanks, Eric.
All right, partner.
See you. Yep, take care.